From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM and Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you. Later tonight, open lines and miracles.
To all everywhere, a Merry Christmas to us all, my dears.
God bless us, everyone.
Merry Christmas to all of you. Here's what's happening. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was rushed off stage at an election campaign event in the southern Israeli port of Ashkelon after rocket sirens blared throughout several communities. One rocket fired from Gaza was intercepted by the Iron Dome missile defense system. Netanyahu was not hurt. Iran's authorities have restricted mobile internet access in several provinces a day before new protests expected to kick off following calls for demonstrations on social media. The last time there was a major demonstration in Iran, over 200 protesters were shot and killed. North Korea's vague threats of a potential year-end provocation, which that regime has dubbed a Christmas gift, have analysts and ex-officials urging the Trump administration to consider tougher treatment towards North Korea in 2020. Kim Jong-un's regime wants sanctions eased by the end of the year, and its warnings have prompted speculation they'd be planning a new missile test, possibly of an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of delivering a nuke warhead. Let's check in with Howard Bloom, the author of The Genius of the Beast. Howard, what are your sources telling you?
Well, first off, we have to face a very simple fact. There's no way that North Korea is going to give up its nuclear weapons program. No sanctions, no love letters, no beautiful vases, and no art of the deal is going to change that simple fact. Look, North Korea has been working on nuclear weapons and intercontinental ballistic missiles since the 1980s. That's nearly 40 years of effort. Three previous presidents thought they had deals to slow or halt North Korea's nuclear program. They didn't. They simply had deals in which North Korea suckered us into giving what North Korea needed most. Often, that was food. What did North Korea do in exchange? You can get an idea from the fact that today, North Korea has an estimated 30 to 60 nuclear warheads. North Korea has launched three intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of reaching Washington, D.C. North Korea has reportedly carried out two rocket engine tests in just the last few days, and North Korea has launched 20 missiles this year alone. John Bolton, President Trump's former national security advisor, told Axios last week that President Trump's maximum pressure campaign is not applying maximum pressure. And General Jack Keane says it may be time to get tough with North Korea. Now, what do Bolton and Keane want us to actually do? Bolton wants our Navy to stop ships at sea carrying oil to North Korea. And Keane wants us to up our sanctions. But there's a problem. It's something you and I talk about a lot. The Axis of Evil. Yep. The Axis of Evil is an alliance of 10 nations led by Russia and China. It includes Iran, Syria, Venezuela, Cuba, and more. Countries like Turkey and Hungary are eager to join. And North Korea is part of that alliance. President Trump's maximum pressure campaign is based on financial sanctions. Sanctions designed to cut off North Korea's supply of oil and cash. Sanctions designed to eliminate the income that North Korea generates from selling coal, iron ore, and metallurgical projects. Russia and China are breaking those sanctions. Do we have the leverage to get Russia and China to work with us on sanctions? That is very unlikely. In fact, North Korea's threat of a year-end surprise is actually a request in disguise. The North Koreans are asking that we lift some of our sanctions as a sign that we are willing to give something in exchange for North Korea's halt of long-range missile testing. And the Chinese are backing the North Koreans. The Chinese are also asking us to lift some sanctions. Now, both the North Koreans and the Chinese are ignoring the fact that President Trump has already given up something. He gave up our joint military exercises with the South Koreans. But President Trump did that without asking anything in return. He threw the gesture away. So here are the options ahead of us. We can increase sanctions. Sanctions that Russia and China will ignore. We can follow John Bolton's advice and start intercepting oil. that is illegally being transferred to North Korea at sea. We can hit North Korea with a surgical strike that takes out some of its nuclear and missile construction sites, or we can decrease a sanction or two. If we go kinetic, if we stop ships at sea, or if we bomb North Korean sites, we will risk war, war with the 10 nations of the Axis of Evil, world war, potentially nuclear war. So I'd recommend loosening a few sanctions. Then if that doesn't help stopping the oil tankers at sea, no matter what we do, we have to remember something. North Korea is now a nuclear nation. It has the ability to strike American cities with its missiles. What's worse, in a few years, it will have the capacity to reach many American cities simultaneously.
You got that right. Howard, enjoy the rest of the holidays, my friend. Thank you. A California man died at a local hospital on Christmas Eve after trying to save his 10-year-old daughter from drifting out to sea. My gosh. The girl had been using a float device in Monterey Bay when the dad saw her float a little too far out in the water. The father swam out to the girl. Then witnesses told rescuers that both of them were struggling in the water. Both were taken to shore, but the father later died. The girl was being treated at the hospital for possibly hypothermia. My gosh, sad story. Trader Joe's has initiated a recall in 29 states because its egg supplier notified the grocery chain that the hard-boiled egg whites used in some of the retailer's products came from a production plant contaminated with listeria. Let's check in with our food safety coach, Jeff Nelkin. Boy, Jeff, these things just don't go away, do they?
No, they don't. And if you think you have any of these products, you certainly should call Trader Joe's or your local health department to verify that you don't have any of this Listeria recalled egg product.
Exactly what is Listeria?
Listeria is a bacteria that tends to come into the food processing facilities, basically on the wheels of equipment, on the boxes, and it likes to hide in cracks in the food processing plant. It's just difficult to get a hold of. It even likes to grow in the refrigerator and has been known to live, you know, in the refrigerator for up to a year. Our concern with Listeria is that 30% of pregnant women can lose the baby.
Oh,
so we want to be real careful about people that are high-risk individuals having any symptoms of Listeria to call their physician immediately.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. And, of course, there's concern that consumers may have unused portions of some of these salads in their homes. Both the egg and potato salads have use-by dates of December 27 on them. So just take heed there. Up next, Richard Smalley joins us as we talk about his later work, A Theology of Love, next on Coast to Coast AM.
Hello, Coach Bob, wishing all of George's listeners a very, very Merry Christmas.
This is Dr. Sky, your eye in the sky, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas.
And welcome back to our Christmas night program. George Norrie with you. I'm getting lots of emails from folks who want to know what time we're going to play the letter from Michael, which is our tradition on Christmas night. And it will be towards the end of the program tonight for those of you who want to record it. So just make sure the end of the program tonight. Richard Smalley, one of today's most highly regarded writers on the esoterica. He is also a graduate of Harvard College and the University of Oxford. He was a longtime editor at the spiritual journal Gnosis and is the author of several books, including A Theology of Love. He currently works as the editor of Quest Books and Quest Journal of the Theosophical Society in America. Richard, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas. I hope you had an enjoyable one.
I did. Merry Christmas to you and to all the listeners out there.
Fascinating work, A Theology of Love, and the subtitle is important, Reimagining Christianity Through a Course in Miracles. Tell me about that.
Well, to begin with, theology sounds like a very, very boring subject. And I'm honored that you would have me on to discuss such a thing, but it's also an extremely important one. Theology sounds totally irrelevant, totally abstract in this world today of facts and things and numbers and objects, but everybody has a theology, and this theology is incredibly important. You have a theology whether you want one or not. Even to believe in nothing is to have a certain set of beliefs about God and the world. And what I'm saying is that traditional Christian theology doesn't make any sense. It never has. And this has become quite obvious to many people. And that has led to a huge gap in our society today. And to go into a totally different area, which we will not go into unless you want to, is we've substituted economics for theology. We don't have a meaningful view of a world in which God is in it, a God of any kind. It's just money. And when you have a world in which money is all it's about, you have the world we're in. And some of you may think that's a great world. Some of you may not think that's such a great world. But I suggest that it could be a better world. So that is where theology begins. It's where what set of beliefs do you have about God and the world?
And theology doesn't necessarily mean religion, does it?
No, no. I mean, as I said, even if you don't believe in anything, you have a theology.
That's right.
You believe, well, if you don't believe in anything, well, that's your theology. There's nothing. There's no God. There's nothing. The only thing that exists are market forces and the forces of money. And that is the religion that the United States, whether it thinks it wants to or not, believes in collectively today, regardless of individuals believe.
One of our dear friends, Mitch Horowitz, wrote a snippet for you on the back of your book, and he is one of a kind. We were talking with him about miracles later this week. He's a great guy.
He is. He's always been a good friend. When he worked at Tarcher Penguin Publishers in New York, he published a number of my books.
Richard, let's talk about miracles for a moment. Your book talks a lot about A Course in Miracles. Explain that to us.
Well, A Course in Miracles is a channel text. And this channel text, a channel text means that the person who wrote it doesn't think they wrote it. That is to say, they were getting some kind of message from another source or level. And I'm sure you've had many channelers and people who dealt with channeled texts on your show. This is one of the most important and most powerful and most profound and most convincing of those. It is a book of about 1,200 pages, and it was dictated to a woman in the psychology department of the Columbia Medical School in the mid-60s and beyond. And it was dictated, it said, by no less a person than Jesus Christ himself. And the idea was to correct many of the theological mistakes that had been inserted into Christianity since Jesus' time and the present. Now, this is a very elaborate, detailed theology. And the reason I'm interested in it, and the reason that I've written this book about it, is that it is the only logical, clear, and consistent Christian theology ever to have been done. Now, did Jesus dictate it? I don't know. There's no proof of it one way or another. There's no criteria by which you could judge it, because as even the most respected New Testament scholars will say, we don't know what in the Bible, and every respected New Testament scholar will say that, we don't know what in the Bible goes back to Jesus and what was put in his mouth afterward.
Right.
So you can't really judge it by that. And so whether it was dictated or not by Jesus, I don't know. It says it was. I retain an open mind about it. Helen Schuckman was the woman to whom it was dictated. And she said, I don't know myself, but the authority and power of the voice that dictated it to me leads me to take it seriously. And that is as far as I will go. My view about whether Jesus dictated or not is exactly the same as Helen Schuckman's own. And it is an enormously reassuring message. It is one that certainly explains a great deal about the way things are and how that could be better. And it, as I said, it presents a theology, a view of God and the world that actually makes sense. It's profoundly hopeful, and it needs to be better understood. There are many books about the Course. Mine puts it in the sense of, you know, a religious discourse. And this is like, well, how does this fit in with all the things they're saying in seminaries and divinity schools? That is the stuff that the ministers, priests, and so on learn. And that is what my book is about.
Do you believe in miracles, Richard?
Yes.
What are they exactly? What is a miracle?
It's a sidestepping of what you would think would be ordinary reality. Usually they're quite small, but many people, including myself and possibly you, have looked at certain things in their lives and our lives and said, wow, that was a miracle.
Yep, absolutely.
So a miracle, to put it another way, is the law, shall we say, the laws of a higher order operating in a lower order. And this lower order, in our sense, is the physical world. A higher order is a higher spiritual world where many things are possible that don't seem to be possible here.
When a miracle occurs, is it because we've asked for it, or does it just happen?
That's a very deep question, because who is we anyway? That's not just like a flip response. It's like, at what level have you asked for it? Because sometimes there's a very deep level within you. That is a very deep level of your own I, capital I, that asks for something that your little conscious self doesn't even know is going on. So I would say, yeah, there's a certain strong amount of will in it, a strong amount of volition in it, but it's not always going to feel that way.
A lot of people tend to ask for help, ask for that miracle, Richard, when they're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it always when they're, you know, they've got their backs against the wall? Why can't they ask for something when things are going well for them?
Well, of course, you know, when you need, when things are going well for you, you don't think you need any help. You think you can do it all on your own.
Yeah.
You know, Turgenev, the great Russian novelist, said, all prayers can be reduced to the same prayer. Please, God, let 2 and 2 not equal 4. And that's actually a fairly profound statement. We, you know, you set up these things. You did everything X, Y, and Z. And, oh, God, please let this not work out the way I've set it up. Please let me do all sorts of horrible things and let me not get caught. Well, sometimes that works, but usually it doesn't. There are times when, you know, you really feel the need of some help and you get it. But it's my view is, and anyone who's starting to make this kind of a, I'm not going to make this in any kind of scientific axioms, because the thing about miracles is, you asked me what a miracle was. One thing about a miracle is that it's unpredictable. Sometimes they shouldn't happen and they do. Sometimes they should happen and they don't. But again, that's the laws of a higher order manifesting in this one. And we all want, you know, everything to be explicable in this order, that is, this realm of time and space. And a miracle doesn't work that way.
Richard Smoley with us. His book is called A Theology of Love. One of his other books is called Supernatural. His website is his name. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back in a moment and talk more about A Theology of Love. We'll take calls with Richard next hour as well. And what's interesting, too, is I like the fact that you talk about it based on love, not fear, because fear really stops everything, Richard, doesn't it?
Well, A Course in Miracles says that there are only really two emotions, love and fear. Everything that is negative in the world, in some way or another, is a result of fear. Hatred, anger, vindictiveness, violence, are all some level or another expressions of fear.
It sure is. Stay with us, Richard. We're going to take a break, but we will come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, our Christmas night program for you.
This is writer, producer, director Mark Zuckerman, wishing you a happy Christmas Day and a wonderful New Year's.
Hello, everybody. This is Daniel Brinkley, wishing you the very, very Merry Christmas and the absolute happiest New Year.
Two wonderful gentlemen there with Mark Zuckerman and Daniel Brinkley. Daniel, of course, who was struck by lightning several times and has lived to come back and talk about it. Well, welcome back to Coast, Richard Smalley with us. Richard, many civilizations have talked about themselves being in end times, and this culture, this civilization is no different. What's your take on end times prophecy?
Well, I would say, are we in the end times? Well, every age is the end of an age, but does this mean that the world is completely going to be convulsed and someone is going to come down and save us? Not in this particular way, in this particular time. One thing about end times is there's a psychological concept called displacement. And displacement is you are afraid of something. You're really afraid. And you don't want to face this fear. So you displace it, as it were, onto something else, a little something that's a little bit more easy mm-hmm. to manage and handle. Now, it is the case that with you and me and everyone who is listening now, your world is going to end in a few decades at the most. We all know this. Your world is going to end. And it might be tomorrow, it might be 50 years from now. I don't know.
Thanks a lot, Richard.
Well, I hope in your case it's 50 years from now at the earliest, but no one knows. But in any case, this is a very disturbing thing. And a lot of people, and this is the role the end times and apocalypse has played, I think, in much of human thought, we don't really want to face that. So, on the other hand, we kind of know it's there. So we've created this story about this end times that are coming for everybody real soon. Some people will, create these dates on the most absurd premises. And it's a way of deflecting our own attention from our own mortality. Because, yeah, your world is going to come to an end. My world is going to come to an end very soon. But facing that purely is very hard. And facing it in this more remote way of, well, somehow Jesus is going to come down and everybody's going to be raptured up and their cars are going to crash on the Dallas Highway mm-hmm. or whatever. We know it's not going to happen that way. But believing it will happen that way kind of makes the real thing a little bit easier to bear.
Sure.
So that is one of the main psychological impetuses of the end times. That doesn't mean that all of the crises and, climate change and whatever, that doesn't mean that those things aren't happening. It means that this kind of notion of apocalypse is a way of dealing with our own death. Oh, by the way, when you die, I guess we all sort of feel, you die alone, which is unpleasant. It's kind of disturbing. The idea that everybody's going to go together, we'll all go together when we go, is at least a little more comforting. So that is one of the chief psychological drives behind the notion of end times.
Do you believe in prophecy, Richard?
No.
You don't? Tell me why. Why not?
Because none of the prophecies have come true.
No.
The only prophecy that I've ever known that has come true was in some of the native traditions where they were talking about earth changes. And, 30, 40 years ago, they were talking about major earth changes, and people laughed at them and said, well, this could never happen and whatnot. And some of these earth changes are happening. Those, you know, Native Americans, indigenous people did predict something like that, and they are coming true. Are they coming true in exactly the way they were forecast? Not exactly, but something like that is happening. All the others simply haven't come true. And that includes a lot of prophecies in the Bible. Like, for example, let's take, you know, people want to take the Bible literally. Okay, let's take the Bible literally. Let's look at what is called the apocalyptic discourse, or the little apocalypse, in Matthew chapter 24, Mark chapter 13, Luke chapter 21. They're all versions of the same thing. And if you read them literally, let's talk about reading the Bible literally. They predict, according to them, Jesus predicts a Roman invasion of Judea with the sack of the temple. And this all happened.
It did happen. That's true.
On the other hand, it also predicts that very soon after this, like almost immediately, the end of the world is coming, which it did not do. Cats went on, as they say, having kittens. So, yeah, the temple in Jerusalem was sacked, the Jews were dispersed, and, you know, we can read the history books, but the world didn't end. And that's if you read the Bible literally. People want to read the Bible literally except when it kind of makes them squirm. There are other biblical predictions that didn't come true in the Old Testament and whatnot. And as I say, if you're going to take the Bible literally, well, you better face the fact that a lot of things it said was going to happen didn't happen. I wrote a book about Nostradamus a few years ago at the prompting of my good friend Mitch Horowitz, as a matter of fact, who you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing about Nostradamus's prophecies. They were either extremely vague, or the few very specific things he predicted, for the most part, simply didn't come true. So, no, I don't believe in prophecy, and that's why.
Is it because the prophets are always wrong, or what is it?
Well, they're not right enough to have you put any faith in them. So when someone says prophecy, well, I don't know. There's so many prophecies that turned out to be wrong, I don't have any particular reason to take them seriously. If they were 100% wrong, you could almost believe in the opposite, but they're not even 100% wrong. So, we don't understand the future well enough. And we understand the future well enough as human beings to be upset by it. Because, you know, your dog doesn't really know too much about the future, except in the very, very, very primitive sense. My dog is built smarter than that, so I'm not putting your dog down. We can kind of foresee the future. And we know two things about the future. Part of it is that the future does kind of go along some kind of line of trends that we can see happening now. And there are these disruptions, these sudden things, these catastrophes that come out of nowhere. We know that about that. Now, if you go about futurology, you know, economic prediction and forecasts and whatnot, all they do is they just say, well, if current trends continue, X, Y, and Z will happen. Except, of course, they know that current trends don't continue. There are these dislocations. Now, the other side is the prophet who predicts these dislocations. And it's all about these dislocations. I was reading today about Antonio Conselheiro, an mad prophet in Brazil in the 19th century.
Uh-huh.
And it's a fascinating story. But, you know, he's sort of pretty, well, all the shore, all the sea will come onto the land, and all the land will come into the sea, which struck me remarkably like some of Nostradamus's prophecies, by the way. Well, these things, these cataclysms, these upheavals, they do happen, except somehow they never really quite happen the way the prophets sort of said they would. So, no, I don't believe in prophecy.
Interesting. Now, there seems to be a lot of anguish on this planet these days, Richard. There probably always has sadness, trouble. What do you think the root cause is for that?
Well, let's go back to theology, which is, after all, one of the things my book is about. Let's go back. Let's take the book of Genesis even somewhat literally.
Okay.
let's cast it in this one. Let me tell you, put it in the form of a story. This man and this woman went to God one day, and they said, "Hey, Lord, we heard that there's this thing called good and evil, and it sounds like kind of neat, and we kind of want to try it." And God said, "No, I really don't suggest you do that." And they said, "Oh, come on, we want to." And God said, "All right, well, if you really want to, but you're going to have to descend into a realm where you're going to have to work hard for a living and where it hurts to have babies." And that is the story of Genesis. Man ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That is, man wanted to know good and evil. You have to work hard for a living. It hurts to have babies, according to every woman I've ever talked to, including my own wife. We wanted to know good and evil, so we got it. And I'm going to say one thing infallibly, without any fear of refutation, about you, myself, and everybody else who's listening to this. You have known some good and some evil in your life. We all have known good and evil. That, according to the book of Genesis, which is not literally true, but in this deeper symbolic sense is true, is what we have. We wanted to know good and evil, and that's what we got. Now, there is a huge, if you want to go further into this, there's a huge thing. Some people say this, is, and traditional Christianity is like this, this is a horrible mistake. Somebody really blew something, someone did something wrong. And the other side of it is like certain views like that of theosophy, and I'm a member of the Theosophical Society, that this was unnecessary. We descended into materiality to learn, to gain certain lessons from it. So some people will say this is a horrible fault. Some people say, well, this is just a necessary process of learning that we had to evolve. And I would be very, very cautious in the extreme about saying which of those two possibilities is the case.
Yet people just don't seem happy.
We wanted to know good and evil. And part of the thing about evil is you don't know when it's coming. If you know when it was coming, so people aren't happy. Now, A Course in Miracles says, there is a way back. And without getting, we can go into as many details as you like, but one way back, or the chief way back, is forgiveness. You could even see it in terms of what people sometimes say when they forgive one another. They say, "This never happened." At a certain level of reality, this didn't happen. On the level that we're talking about, that we believe in, to the exclusion of anything else, that is to say, the material realm, it did happen. But the more you can set that aside, the more you can say, this isn't the ultimate reality. The more you can forgive others, the more you'll be able to set aside this view of the world. And the people who are, if you want to say, why are people unhappy? Well, the people who are most happy, in my experience, are the ones who are the most forgiving, the ones who are most loving, the ones who are most able to put their grievances beside them, quite apart from whatever misfortunes may or may not occur to them.
Are you hopeful for a good resolution to this planet?
Ultimately.
Sooner than later, I trust?
Time is a funny thing. But the idea is, and that's one of the things my book talks about, and one of the things A Course in Miracles says, the minute humanity wanted, let's put it this way, made this mistake, the answer was immediately given. So in the end, the answer is given. Oh, what is the answer? Everybody's off the hook. Nobody's condemned. There's no hell.
A free ride.
What?
A free ride, huh?
Yeah, because you wanted to know good and evil, and you went into this realm, but that really ultimately is not where it is. You're all off the hook. And the only way you can know you're off the hook is to forgive everybody else, to know that they're off the hook too. And the faster you get that message, the faster you will be happier, the faster the earth will be happier, the faster life will seem a little bit more, shall we say, the way it should be. And you can, there's free will in that. You can detain that. You can put that off as much as you can want. But you can't put it off without having it continue to make you miserable.
What makes you think, Richard, that we will have a hopeful ending to all of this?
Because this world, well, of course, in miracles.
And I agree with you, by the way.
The world, of course, in miracles, is a very profound work, and it's extraordinarily tempting to quote it, and I will. The world, it says, the world will end in laughter, because it is a place of tears. God didn't set this up. To go back to my little myth, God didn't set this up. We wanted to know what this good and evil, in terms of A Course in Miracles, we wanted to know what it'd be like to live without God. We got our wish, and this is what it's like. This is why people are not happy. This is why everything seems so awful. This is why everything seems to screw itself up despite the best intentions of everyone and all of the cures and policies and whatnot. Because of that. What is the message of Christianity? Is to love and forgive. This, the basic message, is in the Gospels, and this is given 2,000 years ago, and the fundamental message is true. It's been obscured by a lot of theology in the meantime that I believe is incorrect, but if you behave in a loving, kind, forgiving way, you have a lot better chance of being happy than if you go the opposite route and just stew in your grievances.
Most babies, Richard, are born happy. What happens to them?
Well, it's part of it is they're told at every instant they shouldn't be happy. You know, there is a psychologist named Charles Tart who came up with the idea of consensus trance. And you know how you put, well, hypnosis, you put someone in a trance and, you know, they think they're, I don't know, you pretend you're Greta Garbo or something like that, and that kind of works for, you know, a few minutes and then it wears off. But we do this to all our children. It was done to us, and we do it to our own children. We do as little as possible to our own children if we're somewhat aware. But the whole thing is that the world is an awful place. The world is a nightmare. The world is a dangerous place. And, you know, there's obviously a very delicate balance to be trod between, you know, well, yeah, I guess you do need to look both ways when you cross the street, but to tell your children that everything is after you every last second, you know, breeds deep, fearful and suspicious people. And what do fearful and suspicious people do? They behave in bad ways.
Well, that's true. Richard, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about your work, A Theology of Love. We'll also open up the phone lines and give everybody an opportunity to make a call or two and check in with you about your work. I also want to talk with you about your thoughts about Atlantis, because you've dabbled into that, too. We'll be back in a moment on our Christmas night program right here on Coast to Coast AM.